Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Well, last week I told you that last week's edition of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox was the final soapbox for 2014. I did not intentionally lie to you, my loyal, wonderful listeners. Something happened after I did that show and after I did that interview that really is one of those hold the horses, stop the presses. The remainder of the Cuban Five were freed from U.S. prison and sent back to home to Cuba. So I decided to have a special Cindy Sheehan soapbox this week. So today we will be welcoming back Keith Bolander from Toronto. He is an author and he was a Free the Cuban Five activist. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Keith. And Keith and I will chat about the case, about our experiences with Cuba, and the future. What does it mean, the thaw in U.S.-Cuban relations? What does that mean, especially for Cuba? Keith Bolander, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. It's great to be back.
Yeah. Well, how are things going up there in America Junior?
Wow. We don't like that kind of talk. It's everyone is very nervous. The Canadians are all upset that the Americans are going to be allowed to come to Cuba now, and the Canadian tourists are going to have to find another place.
I know, huh? We're going to despoil it. But the thing is I just thought of that. I've been to Canada many times, and I actually, you and your wife hosted me when we went there for the tribunal on the Cuban Five. But when I called you on Skype, I don't even need a different country code to call a different country.
No, we are very close neighbors. There's so many things that are similar. Fortunately, there's a number of things that are different that makes us unique from our southern neighbors. But it's nice to be sharing the same continent, especially now that the United States of America has finally come into the modern age in regards to Cuba.
Well, I don't think we were quite there yet. I think that the releasing the Cuban Five, of course, the remainder of the Cuban Five was the big story for us, for many of us who have been working really hard on that for, you know, you guys for a long time, myself for the past, you know, 7 or 8 years. But also it is ushering in a thaw, I guess, in Cuban-American-U.S. Relations. But some people are analyzing that might not be quite the good news that some people think it is.
Well, to have the remaining members of the Cuban Five back in Cuba is fantastic. And I'm very happy that Alan Gross is back in the United States as well. So that definitely caught everyone off guard. And then Obama took the next step when he announced that he was moving towards normalization of Cuba, something that a lot of people have been waiting for years. The first step is establishing the embassies in Havana and Washington, upgrading the intersections that are there now. And of course, everyone's got a tremendous amount of hope, especially in Cuba, but your point is well taken. This is just the start of a very long road. There's going to be a lot of complications. There's going to be some backward steps as well. So no one should have any illusions that this is just going to change things overnight. There's going to be a tremendous amount of effort still from the hard right Cuban Americans in Miami to try and, if not prevent it, then to at least delay it or put as many obstacles in front of it as they can. So both sides, I think, understand, both the American side and the Cuban side understand that there's a lot of details and a lot of work that has to be done before true normal relations between these two countries are established. But this is a great start. I mean, everyone should be optimistic. Everyone deserves to be hopeful. And let's see where it goes from here.
Before we get into the case of the five, you know, we'll give my listeners a refresher course on it, but I'm pretty sure my listeners are very sophisticated about the case. But, you know, I saw Mariel Castro, the niece of Fidel and the daughter of Raul. She's in the National Assembly saying that this isn't going to, just because these steps are being taken, Cuba's not going to welcome capitalism back in with open arms. But we do see the hard right Cubans, you know, the counter-revolutionaries here in the United States, thinking that this is an opportunity for them to get back in power.
Well, and no one should have any illusions about what the American strategy is regarding Cuba. That has not changed, and Obama made it very clear. What's changed is the policy. So for the last 50 years, American strategy is regime change in Cuba to get rid of the social economic system that the Cuban Cubans have after the revolution. Well, they tried to do it with the stick, by the aggression, the hostility, the terrorism, the isolation. Well, now Obama has said, well, we're going to try it with the carrot, but the goal is still the same. The Americans still want regime change in Cuba, but they're just trying it a different way.
Right.
And the Cubans know that.
Right.
I've already talked to a number of Cubans since the announcement, and they understand exactly, you know, the Americans have finally come to realize that the embargo and the travel restrictions aren't working, so they're going to try a different way. I welcome that. I think the Cubans are more than ready to take on the American style capitalism, to take on all the influences that they're going to have, and maintain the social structure in Cuba. I have complete confidence that the Cuban government and the Cuban people will be able to understand, you know, the American influence and not to lose the social justice programs that the Cuban Revolution is so well known for. So, but the Cubans, I'm sure, exactly have no illusions about what the Americans are trying to do through this method. They just say, well, let's welcome them and maintain our system and go from there.
Right. The first time I went to Cuba, and really one of the wonderful things of going to Cuba for me is just really telling the U.S. government that they can't tell me where I can go or can't go. And so it's that, you know me and my rebelliousness, you know, it's like, and so now it won't be as fun going there if I could actually have permission to go there. But I think the wonderful things that Cuba did, sending all those doctors to West Africa to combat the Ebola outbreak, really kind of shamed the United States. And I think that that was one of the, you know, the thresholds that made this prisoner exchange possible. But also, I've talked to the Cuban Five, and they said, we don't want an exchange for Alan Gross because we're innocent, and he was actually guilty.
Yeah, and it's funny how perspectives change. Just very quickly, your reference to the Cuban doctors in Africa, that was actually mentioned by Obama, which was really good to see. So finally, there's some respect and credit. As far as the prisoner swap goes, it's funny because Alan Gross, the American perspective is that the remaining of the Cuban Five, the three remaining members, were swapped for this spy that the Cuban government has had in jail for the last 20 years, Rolando Gordillo, who is a Cuban agent working for the American government. And the news is that he was the one that actually gave the American government the information that led to the arrest of the Cuban Five.
Uh-huh.
So the American perspective is that we're swapping these, you know, what they call spies, the Cuban Five, with Rolando Trujillo, the Cuban agent working for the American government, and that Alan Gross was thrown in by the Cuban government as a humanitarian gesture. So
mm-hmm.
the Americans have never, and I doubt they ever will, admit that Alan Gross was actually doing illegal activities in Cuba. They just maintained that he was just simply a contractor trying to set up these internet sites, which was a complete not reality, based in reality. Alan Gross was down in Cuba trying to set up illegal internet sites, bringing in military-level SIMs and high-tech equipment, trying to set up sites that the Cuban government would not be able to identify, which is an illegal activity in any country in the world. So it's just funny how different governments perceive, both the American and the Cuban government has perceived this swap. The main thing is that the Cuban Five are home. That's the main thing, that's for sure.
That's the main thing. You know, I woke up that morning and I still hadn't had my coffee or finished a cup of coffee, and I'm just like scrolling through my emails, and I must have passed by the one from the U.S. Committee to Free the Cuban Five like six times before it sunk in that the headline actually was saying the Cuban Five are free. And it took me a while to even process it. I was shocked, but then, you know, my sister's staying with us for the holidays, and she had on CNN. I never watched that crap, but, you know, she watches it just to see what the imperial propaganda is. They didn't mention the Cuban Five for a long time that day. It was all about Alan Gross is coming home. Alan Gross is coming home.
And when they got around to the other news that the Cuban Five, I mean, the average American has known all of
right.
the Cuban Five. And then again, CNN and the mainstream media just framed the whole announcement as normalization, move towards normalization, in typical the perspective of, okay, now we're going to be able to bring freedom to Cuba. Now
right.
we're going to be able to bring democracy to Cuba. And
mm-hmm.
the Cuban say, yeah, we already have those things. Thank you very much. So again, the mainstream media is not going to change their message. But yeah, it was a shock to everyone. My mother-in-law told me that I was in the basement and she yelled out, "Oh, the Cuban government has released Alan Gross." And I said, "Oh, that's fantastic. That's
mm-hmm.
really good." And then when I got on the internet and then realized the much, much bigger news was that the Cuban Five were coming home, it was just such a great feeling, and everyone seemed to be caught off guard on this. And I'm so, you know, and now the news with Gerardo and his wife expecting their first child in January, it's just so good to have all this come true finally.
I saw a picture of Adriana. I saw her pregnant. I was like, how'd that happen?
How did that happen?
But, so the U.S. actually allowed what they said. I read that they put out a release that it was done by remote control. So
yeah, what does that mean? I'm not sure exactly. I have been told by a number of Cuban officials Adriana had been allowed to visit Gerardo a few times under the arrangement that under the agreement that these visits would not be made public. So,
So Adriana
get
visas?
Well, that's totally unconfirmed.
It's
simply some Cuban officials that had told me that, but no one's been able to confirm that, and maybe. It never will. I mean, what's remote control? Is that like artificial insemination?
Right,
Or do we have another virgin birth that we may have to deal with?
Because that was one of the, you know, things that we always demanded before complete freedom, that they grant visas to Adriana to see Gerardo, because she and Olga, the partner of Renee Gonzalez, were the only wives that weren't granted visas to visit their husbands.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe the true story will emerge how Adriana became pregnant, but it's certainly the timing couldn't be any better.
Yeah. I mean, and for them to be home at this time of year. Last year, on New Year's Eve, I found out that my dear friend Lynn Stewart, who was a political prisoner, was released from medical facility in Texas due to what they call compassionate release, because she has cancer. And that was also a complete shock. It's like we work so hard for these things, and sometimes we get victories. And for me, knowing the government here in the United States, it's just a total surprise and shock. And of course, I'm very cynical, and I always think that there's some nefarious motives, which there probably is. But the bottom line is the Cuban Five are back where they belong, all of them, all five of them. So, Keith, just give my listeners a brief, like, recap of the case of the five.
Well, it goes back to the early 1990s, and I guess even before that, to the early months after the triumph of the revolution in 1959. I mean, the reaction of the United States government and certain Cuban American individuals was violence against the revolution. So mm-hmm. for years, the Cuban government has had to deal with hundreds of acts of terrorism. And in the 1960s, a lot of these acts of terrorism against Cuban civilians in Cuba were sponsored and coordinated by the American government. The most famous is Operation Mongoose,
mm-hmm.
That was completely controlled by the American government. Well, in the 1980s, that sort of shifted to certain Cuban American organizations based in South Florida, the Cuban American National Foundation, Omega 7, Alpha 66. These organizations that were dedicated to the violent overthrow of the revolution, and they did it by committing acts of terrorism against Cuban civilians. More than 3,000 Cuban civilians have died in the past 34 years from these acts. The most infamous is the bombing of the Cuban Airlines in 1976 that killed 72 people. Well, in response, the Cuban government, had very little options. So one of the ones they decided was to send intelligence agents from Cuba into the United States to infiltrate these Cuban American organizations that were conducting these acts of terrorism in the hopes of preventing further acts. And in fact, they did. They uncovered a number of potential acts of terrorism that were going to take place in Cuba and elsewhere that were being organized by these Cuban American organizations. So this information was sent back to Cuba in the early 1990s, and the Cuban government offered to share it with the United States, the FBI, which they agreed to. The Americans agreed to that. They came over to Cuba. There was an exchange of information. And then the American side went back into South Florida, uncovered the Cuban Five, and now we're understanding that they were able to uncover it thanks to the help of this spy, Rolando Trujillo, that was exchanged for the remaining members of the Cuban Five. So the American government uncovered the network of Cuban intelligence agents working within the Cuban American organization, and the American government arrested them. And eventually five of them became known as the Cuban Five. And they were put in, they were given, after a long series of ridiculous trials and appeals, way up to the Supreme Court, they were sentenced to unbelievably long terms, jail sentences, including Gerardo, who was given two life sentences plus 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a ridiculous situation. The trials have been condemned internationally, including the United Nations. So this was in 1996. Since then, two of the five had been released. They served their complete sentence. Not one
right.
day was given off for good behavior. And the expectation was despite the tremendous efforts of these organizations, the expectation was that Gerardo would never see the light of day, would never get back to Cuba. So, again, just to close the circle, there were three remaining members of the Cuban Five that were still in jail, and with the prisoner swap, they've been released. The other two were going to be released in the next few years. But Gerardo, there was such pessimism that he would ever be released. So for him to be back, for him to be free and for him to soon become a father is just fantastic news. And the end of this distorted episode in an American justice, which the Cuban Five never did receive. They didn't receive any level of American justice. All they were doing was trying to prevent further acts of terrorism, and they spent a lot of years because of that.
Well, and we had some major developments in the case, and the most recent one, I think, was that the U.S. government was paying journalists to print articles against the Cuban Five when they were on trial?
Yeah, there's so many elements to this, and this is one of the ones that is becoming more and more public, is that when the Five were arrested, there was a tremendous campaign in South Florida, in Miami, against these five Cubans before the trial had even started. So all these stories came out that they were spies, that they were doing all these things that just wasn't true. And so it created, obviously, a great deal of prejudice within the community, and the defense attorneys asked for the trial to be removed from Miami and into another location in the United States. And this is standard procedure, and it's granted all the time, except in the case of the Cuban Five. The trial took place in Miami, and not surprisingly, the jury convicted them in a certain level, because they'd read so much negative things about these five
right.
Of course, the media never explained the real reason why the five were there, to prevent acts of terrorism. They just claimed that they were spies from Fidel Castro, and they were there intent to do harm to the United States of America. Well, it came out years later that so many of these stories written by the journalists in Miami and South Florida were paid by the United States government to write these stories. So that alone should have been sufficient evidence to declare a mistrial and to have them released completely. But there's been such efforts to have this information not be released. And again, the average American doesn't know the Cuban Five or understand what they've gone through. But right from day one, it was just a travesty. And now when you find out how much money that the American government paid these journalists to write these negative stories and to influence the negative attitudes against the Cuban Five among the community, it just is even more frustrating and more aggravating to have the Cuban Five have to spend so many years in jail for something they never did.
Well, and you would think in a just society, or a nation that had a system of laws in place, that just knowing that alone would have been reason enough to immediately overturn their sentences and send them home.
Exactly. Yes. And that was one of a great deal of irregularities that were pointed out but were ignored, because the American government was absolutely determined for these Cuban Five to be punished, and to be punished for many, many years. And the first couple of years of the after they were sentenced, the five were put in solitary confinement in various different jails, some of them high security. So anything and everything the American government could do to punish them, and by extension to punish the Cuban government, they did. So to finally have this travesty end is just amazing news.
Oh, it's a miracle, really.
it really was.
And, it coincides with increasing police state brutality and oppression here in the United States. It coincides with the releasing of the torture report, and with Obama not holding the Bush administration accountable. because, of course, he's afraid the next administration will hold him accountable, and so on and so on. So, yeah, it does coincide with a lot of awful nudes, but we take our victories when we can and where we can. And I think of our friends like Saul Landau and Bernie Dwyer, who didn't live to see this great day. And there's so many people who gave so much to make this happen that it really is cause for celebration.
Yeah, exactly. Those are the people who spent so much time, even before it became as well known as it eventually did, that are no longer with us, that we definitely have to remember. And it's just unfortunate that they couldn't be here to share in the victory for justice. The main thing is that the five are home. It's great to see them all celebrating with one another in the news media in Cuba. And coincidentally, I'm going to be in Havana the first 2 weeks in January. I planned this trip for a number of months. I'm working on a third book, and I'm going to be speaking to at least one or two of the five, and I'm working hard to try and arrange an interview with all five at the same time, which would be amazing. But I'm looking forward to getting down to Cuba and talking to my Cuban friends and just get into the optimism and the excitement that's taking place down there. And I'm really looking forward to getting down there.
Well, and I think one of my jobs, not just working hard to free the five, but is to educate the people who live in the United States about what's really happening in Cuba, how Cuba really is. Because, I was born in 1957. My entire life has been, demonization and propaganda against Cuba and the revolution. So when the U.S. wants to, do something like lie about Cuba or lie about the Cuban Five, there's decades of precedent already in place. So it's like really hard to break through all of that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And this is one of the elements of the process towards normalization that I really think is a positive thing, because if more average Americans can go down and visit Cuba and see for themselves what this country is all about, see the good, see the bad, talk to the people, which are so friendly, and get their own opinion. For so many years, the gatekeepers of the Cuban message has been controlled by the American government and then by the anti-Castro Cuban-American politicians.
Right.
So that's why they're upset. Not only are they going to lose political influence and economic power, but they're going to see Americans go down to Cuba and find out for themselves and make their own decision and come back. And the majority, I'm sure, will say, well, why did we have this embargo on this country for so many years anyway?
Right.
So to have, thousands and thousands of Americans, and I really hope, this is the result that they will be able to, that Obama will make it easier under the licensing to have Americans come down to Cuba, see for themselves, interact with the Cuban people, and not have this very narrow, hard right to control the message.
And I do want you to tell my listeners a little bit about your most recent book. You were on the soapbox to talk about it, and how they can get, order it or get a copy. But I just want to tell you a quick story before we do that. I went to Cuba last year, and I was able to hang out with, his name just flew out of my head, Rene, and he was home, and so he had just, been released, and they had a symposium in Havana about the Cuban Five, and so this is the first time I flew through Panama to go to Cuba, and of course, Panama is just a, little satellite of the United States, so I didn't have to go through customs in Panama, but when I got back to Los Angeles, I had to go through customs, and there was no stamp on my passport about anything. So the guy's like, because Cuba doesn't stamp our passports, they give us a visa, but usually we would get a stamp in like Cancun or wherever we flew through. And so he asked me where I'd been, and I said I'd been to Cuba. And he looked at me and he goes, "Are we allowed to go there now?" And I said, "I don't know. Why don't you tell me? Because you work for immigration." You know, so I guess I said, "Obviously we are, because I was just there." And he said, "Well, what'd you go there for?" I said, "I went for a conference." I try not to give them very much information, just as what they asked. And I actually have a lot more hard time getting in and out of Canada now than I do anywhere else. But anyway, the guy said, "What was the conference about?" I said, "It was about the Cuban Five. They were arrested. They were, you know, anti-terrorist agents here in the United States." And the guy just stamped my passport and said, "Welcome home," and let me go. He didn't even want to hear why I was there. But I thought it was so interesting. He goes, "Are we allowed to go there now?"
Yeah, well, hopefully that question won't even be asked now.
And I didn't say, "We're allowed to go where I'm allowed to go wherever I want to go, dude," because I'm an adult. But anyway, Keith, so tell us about your latest book and where my listeners can order a copy.
Sure. I've written two books. The first one came out in 2010. It's called Voices from the Other Side. It's an oral history of terrorism against Cuba. I interviewed dozens and dozens of average Cuban citizens in Cuba who have been victimized by these acts of terrorism or who had friends and family members killed. So it was based in just a series of interviews. I went from one side of the aisle to the other, and it was quite an amazing experience. It's called Voices from the Other Side. The publisher is Pluto Press in London, England. The second book came out 2 years ago, and it's called Cuba Under Siege. And it's an examination of how American policy has affected Cuban society, its economy, and the individual Cuban citizen who, again, you mentioned, you know, that you've grown up, you know, almost all your life has been known nothing but the embargo. Well, the vast majority of Cubans living in Cuba were born after the embargo, so
right.
They've known nothing about it other than hostility
mm-hmm.
from the United States. So the book examined the different aspects of how America applied hostile actions against Cuba, not just the terrorism, but the economic embargo, the travel restrictions, the extraterritorial
right.
aspects of American law, and just how it's affected Cuban society. That was published by Paul Grace Macmillan in New York, and both of them are available on Amazon. Or if your local bookstore doesn't have them, they can certainly be ordered. But the easiest way would be the internet, the individual publishers, or an Amazon.
I don't have a local bookstore. We don't have one bookstore in my town anymore. So I would love to have a little independent store or something, but that they're few and far between these days. So
Unfortunately true. Yeah.
And how can my listeners get in touch with you if they have any more questions, or do you have a website?
I do have a blog.
Uh-huh.
It's called Bolo Blog, BOLOBLOG.com.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to be actually updating it very, very shortly regarding all this news.
Uh-huh.
Some of the articles that I've written. And I have an email. I can give out my email. I'd be more than happy to exchange views and perspectives. And now I've actually talked to a number of Americans who always wanted to go to Cuba,
uh-huh.
but for whatever reason were a little hesitant. And now they're saying, well, now that it's the perception is that, you know, things have changed, that they want to go. So they ask me all sorts of questions.
Uh-huh.
The first question that the Americans ask is, well, is it safe for an American citizen? I said, yeah, Cuba's the safest place in the Caribbean.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my gosh.
So my email is bolodive, BOLODIVE, @gmail.com.
Well, thank you so much, Keith, for being on the show again. And Happy New Year to you and everybody, and hopefully we'll see you around somewhere sometime.
Cindy, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. And hopefully next time we'll see each other in Havana.
Yay. We just saw each other in D.C. Recently at a conference. Would you have thought that was last June, right?
Yeah.
Would you have thought there?
No. No.
On that day that we'd be talking today about this great victory.
Not at all. I would have bet money against it, and I was in Cuba in October, and no one had any inclination whatsoever. And that's an amazing thing, that both sides were negotiating this for 13 months, and nothing came out.
Right.
Nothing was leaked. That was incredible.
Well, Keith, thank you so much again for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and we'll keep in touch. And I'll put all your links on the newsletter and stuff of the things that we just talked about, too, your books and your blog and stuff like that.
Thank you, Cindy. Hope to see you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Well, I promise you, that is Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week and this year, 2014. We'll be back in 2015 with more exciting, informative, and we hope inspirational shows. We'd like you to join us in celebrating the return of the Cuban Five, all of them back to Cuba where they belonged. And on behalf of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, I'd like to wish you all a very warm and wonderful, prosperous and peaceful new year, and really a renewal of the struggle for peace and everyone's prosperity and a sustainable environment. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my assistant, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank Mikey for helping us with the show sometimes. I'd like to thank Keith Bolander for his work and for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox on our final edition for 2014. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening to and supporting Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm going to say it one more time. This is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.